I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. The coronavirus continues to infect the U.S. economy, with 2.4 million people applying for unemployment benefits last week. Coming up, how the pandemic is affecting the real estate market across the country as renters and homeowners wonder about how they'll make their next payment and landlords worry about their bottom line. But first, student housing. Many college students signed leases at the beginning of the school year for apartments near their campus. Now, with students sent home and classes going online, many are saddled with rents they can't afford and apartments they no longer need or use. The Philadelphia Inquirer's Ellie Rushing wrote about this impact on students in the Philadelphia area, including efforts to organize for rent relief. She's a breaking news reporter at the paper and joins us on Radio Times. And Ellie Rushing, nice to have you with us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Tell us about these companies. We're not talking about student dorms here. We're really talking about companies that rent to students. Help us understand who these companies are.
So really the story I was looking at the big box apartment complexes that are kind of on the edges of university campuses. Most of them are really large corporations, million dollar corporations that are mostly based, you know, out of state, and they have private apartment complexes all across the country.
And we're talking about apartments. I guess they would look like an apartment that you might find in an apartment building in, let's say, Center City, Philadelphia, although maybe some more student type amenities.
Right. They specifically market to students. Their websites, you know, tout their study spaces and laundry rooms, and they label themselves as actual official student housing on their websites.
Do they have a relationship with universities, or are they separate entities?
They are separate entities. Some have relationships with universities. One corporation, American Campus Communities, has a partnership with Drexel University. Sometimes when colleges require students to live in student housing for their first 2 years, Drexel students can live in American Campus Communities, and that, you know, fulfills that requirement. And so it's these relationships and really just their location to the colleges. Sometimes the college lets them develop on part of the university's real estate. And I mean, this just really maintains a steady stream of tenants who are willing to pay a premium for their location and for their security.
I mean, I would think, because, you know, except for who knows for September, but you would know how many people are going to be filling up your apartments come September, generally speaking.
Exactly.
Help us understand then the conundrum that a lot of these students are in.
So in March, when Philadelphia universities and universities across the country started closing down, schools urged students to go home. So those that could, they left. They went home. No one really knew how long this shutdown was going to be going on. And turns out it ended up canceling most of their school year, and all classes were moved online.
And students are still...
So when this happened, students...
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, students then lost their jobs. Their parents started losing their jobs. Their parents were furloughed. And they started thinking about, I mean, they're responsible for still paying for these apartments that they had rented. They'd signed these leases that sometimes maybe go through the summer. And they're saying, well, what do we do now? We're not even living there. And how are we supposed to continue paying for it?
Do they have any options under the circumstances?
So legally, they really have little recourse. The leases and state law are in the landlord's favor. Students also, because most of them are claimed as dependents, they didn't qualify for the $1,200 stimulus checks from the government. Many of them don't reach the level to receive unemployment payments. And so, I mean, they're kind of stuck. They're going to their landlords, they're going to these big corporations, and they're asking for help, they're asking for assistance. And they're not getting much response. They're not getting much help from them because the law is on the landlord's side.
You mentioned the fact, and I would assume under most circumstances, you've got them parents co-signing these leases. So the parents are on the hook as well, correct?
Yeah, it's unclear. I mean, how big of a financial issue this could cause for the whole family, because right, the parents are co-signers. If the students can't pay, the parents are on the hook. And some of the like larger corporations, like American Campus Communities, they have said that they've pledged not to let it affect the tenants or their parents' credit scores. And they're waiving late fees. And at least American Campus Communities specifically has said that it's offered around $17 million in rent relief so far. They're forgiving about maybe a month here and there for a student, and they're working with students on a one-by-one basis. But at the end of the day, yeah, these students are scared, and their parents don't really know what to do either. This is really just unprecedented.
You mentioned American Campus Communities. You described it as the mm-hmm. largest private dorm manager. And they do have, you quoted the CEO in the paper in the Inquirer, about a resident hardship program. Is that what you were referring mm-hmm. to?
Right, yes. They started this program, and they say they're working with students on a first-case basis. But the student that I spoke to for my story, Gina Moffa, she said that it's been tough to get in touch with people. It's like, these are huge corporations, and you're emailing with them back and forth, and you feel like you can't really get your point across completely. She said she feels like a number, and that at the end of the day, they just want to get their money.
And she's a Drexel student, correct?
Yeah, she's a senior at Drexel, so she'll be graduating.
Are the universities in a position to help these students?
You know, that's where the students have felt frustrated with that, because these corporations do have sometimes partnerships with the universities, and they feel like their schools, you know, should step up to advocate for them. But, I mean, the schools don't really have a place to. These are privately owned corporations, and a school can't tell them that they need to let students move out when the student has signed a lease with this corporation.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you and also give out ways that folks can join our conversation. That's Ellie Rushing, and she's a breaking news reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer, and she wrote about the impact of students who have signed leases in the fall. Obviously, classes are closed. Classes have gone online. Students are no longer in these apartments, often home with their families and trying to figure out how to pay their rent or how to, frankly, get out of a lease. And you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Ellie, are students then and their families, are they cobbling together money so that they can at least pay the rent or pay portions of the rent? And if they stop paying the rent, what would happen?
So if they were to stop paying their rent, the companies could, at the end of the day, come after them financially. Usually if you try to terminate a lease early, you could be required to owe the remainder of the lease total. The company or the landlord could come after you in small claims court for any sort of legal fees or the amount of money that it takes for them to find a new tenant. And so students, you know, they're starting to organize, but so many of them have been dispersed across the country that it's tough.
In fact, a question from Pat who says, are the students able to get the promise that this won't affect their credit scores in writing? Are we that far along in this process?
I'm not sure about, you know, in writing, but at least the American Campus Communities said in a statement from their CEO, they've pledged not to let this affect their credit scores. But again, that's only one corporation. And it would really come down to how giving they decide to be with their students.
In fact, you detail the fact that there are different companies who are in the same kind of business with different policies, American Campus Communities being the largest.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then near Temple, there's a building called The Nest, and they have said that they won't charge students who have signed leases in the fall if university in-person classes are canceled, because that's also something students are worried about. A lot of them, you know, signed leases for the fall last mm-hmm. fall because you have to get that coveted apartment. And now they're saying, well, what if classes are canceled? Are we still going to have to to pay for this apartment? Are we still going to be on the hook for it? And some of them aren't getting answers. The Nest near Temple has said that they won't charge students if those classes are canceled in person.
You did profile, actually, three students who are at Westchester University. That's just outside of Philadelphia. And they created something called Advocates for WCU Renters, in a sense, organizing to address this problem. What did they do, and what's been the response?
Yeah, so the three young women who are leading the charge for the Westchester University Renter Group, they started organizing and working with university, local, and actually state officials to get people on their side to hear what students are going through. And they've had the Westchester University president, Representative Carolyn Komita, the mayor of Westchester. They had a Pennsylvania senator who have signed on to a letter that they've written asking landlords to be forgiving, to maybe let students out of their leases in the fall if classes don't return. Their Facebook group has grown to over 450 members.
Wow.
Last Friday, they had a virtual meeting with the Office of the Attorney General, with the Bureau of Consumer Complaints. And next week, they're hosting a conversation with local landlords. Their situation is a little bit different because it seems that Westchester Borough doesn't really have as many of those really big corporations. It seems that they're kind of working on more of a local level with, you know, families or someone who owns maybe one or two homes or apartments here and there, rather than really massive million-dollar corporations.
But an interesting model that perhaps other students and other universities could at least consider going forward.
Definitely. And 70% of Westchester University students commute, so it seems like it's been a little bit easier for them to organize because a lot of them are still in the area. But they have started reaching out to Penn students, to Drexel students. I think I saw on their Facebook that they're interested in maybe working with some of the Penn Law students to see if they could get some pro bono law support if things start getting heated up and they need more legal support with taking action.
Ellie, we're almost out of time here. We do have a caller, but I'm going to hold on to our caller and use him with our second guest who's waiting to join us after this short break. But is this a story you will continue to follow? It's really fascinating and I think opens up a whole area of discussion.
Yeah, I definitely want to keep following it. It's, you know, college students feel like they've kind of been left out of the conversation a little bit. And they say that, you know, the country doesn't really understand sometimes what they're going through. I mean, when it came to the dorms closing, they were dispersed. When it comes to the stimulus checks, many of them are in that financial limbo of not being able to receive that money. And so at the end of the day, they're sitting here and they're saying, well, what help can we get? And so I definitely want to keep following it to see, especially what these Westchester students are able to accomplish and what other Philadelphia area students are going to do when it comes down to it and they have to pay a lot of money.
Well, Ellie Rushing, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. A breaking news reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer, and we'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Mas Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We're talking about the trickle-down effect of the pandemic, its impact on housing. Even though there are signs the economy is opening back up, renters and homeowners worry about how to make their monthly payments. There have been calls for rent strikes and a moratorium on evictions in various parts of the country. Here in Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf put a hold on evictions until July 10th. We asked Kristen Capps to join us, who's been covering this story for Bloomberg City Lab, where he's a staff writer. And Kristen Capps, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, to join our conversation, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Interested to hear from homeowners and renters and landlords and tenants as we talk about housing and the real estate market. Kristen, let's start with a sort of a big picture question. We're talking about almost 40 million Americans. I heard this morning something like 25 5% of the U.S. population has been affected by this pandemic. What has been the overall impact on the real estate market, on housing?
Well, it's really hard to say. When you look at certain segments, you can begin to build part of the picture, but there's not a great way of tracking, for example, what's happening to renters across the country. We found in April that for residents of professionally managed multifamily housing buildings, this is apartment buildings, large apartment buildings, it was a slow start to the month, and about a third of those renters had trouble paying the rent on time by April 5th. This turned into a very worrying picture for a lot of pundits and politicians, but by the end of the month, those renters had actually caught up to their rent, and in May, it's been pretty normal for apartment renters. But these are market rate apartment renters. What we don't really know yet is how this pandemic has affected low-income families, renters who receive assistance, renters who live in single-family homes, for example, which is a growing share of the population. The answer is really that there's a lot we don't know.
Well, let me pick up on your article, most recent article is about the fact that in May, about 80% of people were able to make payments for the apartments that you just described. Is that because many people did get a $1,200 check from the federal government for more and more people? Money is coming in from various states to help stabilize their income. Does that explain, you think, why it looked close to normal?
Yeah, that's a good question. One thing that landlords, these building owners have said is that they're trying to work with tenants in a lot of places, certainly not everywhere. But you see tenants turning to their savings. You've seen them use credit cards to pay the rent, which is worrying for a different reason. But you have also seen tenants receive this stimulus, the one-time payment of up to $1,200, and you've seen them receive unemployment with, you know, tens of millions of Americans receiving unemployment. That federal boost to unemployment of $600 a week has been incredibly important, I think, to keeping tenants, paying their rent and able to keep up with their bills, and also not sacrificing things like food or health care in order to pay their rent, which is what you see often in periods of struggle.
Sure, sure. I mean, we're at this curious position because on the one hand, we've got, you know, millions of people who were either out of work or are losing hours on their job. And we also see signs, I believe every state now has some version of opening up. So we're in this sort of curious moment of kind of stasis, not sure where things are going to go from here. And I would assume if we're talking about the housing market that it needs and relies on a certain level of stability.
Yes, you're right. I mean, going forward, I think we're going to want to see what happens in August. A lot of experts tell me they worry that is the cliff, because that's when federal eviction moratoriums and foreclosure moratoriums begin to ease off. It's when a lot of the state protections that have been passed will already have fallen away, and it's when that $600 per week boost to unemployment insurance ends. So that is a big moment when, if the economy is not back and running in a substantial way, then a lot of American households will be looking at severe precarity.
Let me get some callers in on the conversation. Again, talking with Kristen Capps. He's been writing about the impact of the pandemic on on tenants, on landlords, on homeowners. It's a big sprawling topic and, of course, a very important part of the U.S. economy. You can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can pick up the phone and call us at 1-888-477-9499. Kristen, let me take a couple of callers, and then I do want to talk about some of these calls for rent strikes. We've got Annie, and Annie is joining us from West Philadelphia. Annie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. We love you out here. We're so grateful for your work.
I'm
a renter in West Philadelphia. My building is currently being sold, and the new landlord, through a property management company, wants to raise.
We do not have a good phone line. Annie, we don't have a good call a line from you to West Philadelphia. I'm just going to read what I have on the screen here and give Kristen a chance to respond. She's saying she lives in West Philadelphia, which is a university part of the city, and her landlord, sounds like she's got a new landlord, is trying to increase her rent. Is there any recourse? Is there something, and does it vary from city to city?
Yes, this varies really widely. Every state has its own set of policies based on, what kind of protections they set at the state level for tenants and for homeowners, too, that say whether you can be evicted and under what terms you can be evicted during this crisis, whether your rent can be increased, and just a number of other factors. Rent and tenancy is hard enough during normal times. It's hard for tenants to know what their rights are, and landlords have a lot of information in that kind of asymmetric balance. So I think that someone who is facing what they worry might be an illegal or an unfortunate rent advance would want to contact the Office of the Tenant Advocate and try to nail down what rights the state and the local municipality have passed during the pandemic. One great place to look for that is at Eviction Lab, which has the organization out of Princeton University, which has a rundown of the different state protections that have passed.
Yeah, we know about Eviction Lab, and we'll put that information on our Facebook so that people can, our Facebook page, so people can link to that and find out for themselves. Sorry, we couldn't hear your voice. Let's try Kate, and Kate is calling us from New Jersey. And Kate, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you. I want unemployment or PUA. I got an unemployment number after filling out the form a couple or 3 months ago. I also filed with the Small Business Administration. Absolutely nothing works for people who are small landlords. You could call me a landlord because I have a family with two parents and five kids, and they're not going to be thrown out anywhere, no matter what. But they've lost their jobs, they're behind in the rent, but they couldn't pay the water sewer. My property taxes continue, and they're the highest in the USA. I pay insurance, I pay property management, I pay plumbers and electricians, and I'm beside myself that there is really no hope, no help for people like me. Can you help?
Okay. I don't know if we can help, but I really appreciate your call because I think you've raised so many important points. And Kristen, we're talking about, someone that owns a few properties and getting squeezed and getting really no assistance. What can you say back to her?
Well, I think that's what you're hearing from a lot of landlords who are in the same similar position. Many of them feel sympathy for their tenants and want to work with them. At the same time, they might not have the kind of mortgage that is, can enter into a federally protected forbearance. And they've got bills to pay, maintenance bills. Cleaning costs are through the roof during this time, especially for apartment buildings, which have, shared spaces. And we're coming into summer, and that means, costs for repairing or maintaining or upgrading air conditioning. There's a fear that landlords won't be doing the regular maintenance and upgrades if they're not receiving the rent. So I think what I hear from, you know, a lot of experts is the best way to, you know, avoid hardship is to keep these payments flowing. And that means putting assistance into the hands of renters who can pay their bills and spread that payment up the chain.
Let me just, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I realize not the perfect answer, but I think there are so many problems associated with what our caller just mentioned. Kristen Capps has been covering the story about the effect of the pandemic on landlords, on tenants, homeowners, and he's a staff writer at Bloomberg's City Lab. And again, you can join us Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. I should add that we have a staff attorney, Kadeem Morris from Community Legal Services, and he'll be joining us in about 10 minutes or so. Kristen, let's talk about the cancel rent movement. There are calls in various cities, various parts of the country, including, I think, here in Philadelphia, to essentially go on strike and have a kind of a moratorium on paying rents. Help us understand where this is coming from and what you think the impact would be.
Well, right. So a number of tenant organizations and social justice groups, among them the Center for Popular Democracy, People's Action, the Partnership for Working Families, have called for a popular tenant grassroots movement to cancel the rent, to withhold the rent during this crisis. And there are a number of dimensions to this call to action. One is that they want to see, you know, of course, they want to see lawmakers pass legislation to forgive the rent. Mm-hmm. To make it so that renters and mortgage holders are not responsible for these payments during the duration of this crisis. They also want to see it made possible that if and when buildings go into foreclosure, if there are apartment buildings where landlords fail, they want to see these buildings turned into social housing. They want to see opportunities for communities and nonprofits to acquire these buildings to make them permanently affordable. One problem that experts outline with this draft is that you have a plan for one thing but not the other in place. Like you might see, and you have seen, I think, thousands of tenants and many buildings say that they're withholding the rent, but there isn't necessarily a mechanism in place to ensure that those buildings become social housing if there is, some catastrophe. What has happened in the past and what happens often with affordable housing is that they come into the possession of banks and investors. Then they're very unlikely to stay affordable housing.
Well, in fact, you're right that a lot of these, you know, mortgages for these large apartment buildings or companies are securitized. So, yes, investors get hurt. But when you dig deeper into that, we're talking about pension funds that help teachers and, you know, government employees. And so it's not just sort of going after the bad guys or even the big guys, that there are impacts on sort of everyday people.
Right. Yeah. When people talk about sending the pain up the chain, you know, if the tenant withholds the rent, then the landlord can't pay the mortgage and then banks get hurt. But you're right. It's not banks. Those mortgage loans are securitized. They are invested in by pension funds. But one thing to note in this crisis is that the Federal Reserve has pledged to buy with an unlimited purse these, you know, securitized notes. Creates other problems for the mortgage banking system, but it does mean that it's not likely to be a case where that part of the housing system is going to collapse. The real vulnerability remains with low-income families, and we just don't know yet exactly what they're doing or how they're enduring. I mean, if 40% of families making under $40,000 is under, you know, severe hardship right now, which is, I believe, the last numbers I saw from the Federal Reserve then. That's a huge rent catastrophe.
Sure. And I believe the Federal Reserve was saying, looking at those people, they could not afford an extra bill of $400. So they have no money in the bank, no cushion.
And when we talk about in context of the cancel rent movement, you know, there's a sort of fine line between not wanting to pay the rent out of a sense of solidarity and justice, not being able to pay the rent. So whether or not there is mass legislative movement or legislation in support of this mass movement to cancel the rent, we may end up with a situation in which the rent is canceled because tens of millions of Americans can't afford it, especially when that boost, the federal boost to the unemployment benefits ends.
About a minute or so before our break here, but this is a question that I've been asking a lot when we do pandemic-related shows, and I think the virus has actually exposed a lot of weaknesses within our own system, and I wonder, even looking forward, whether this is an opportunity to revisit rents. And I know up in New York, I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know how someone can pay the kinds of rents that they pay up there, but is this an opportunity to sort of rethink what a rent should be?
You know, definitely there is a need for that. It's certainly true that rents are incredibly expensive in a lot of the coastal cities. Yeah. But when you look outward, it's everywhere. There's no place in the country where, you know, the local prevailing minimum wage can pay for rent without imposing a cost burden. People are paying more than a third of their income toward the rent. People in severely cost burdened homes are paying half of their income toward the rent, and those shares are steadily rising.
Kristen, just hold on to that thought, only because we have to take a very short break, and I do want to pick up on that. Kristen Capps is a staff writer for Bloomberg City Lab. Kadeem Morris from Community Legal Services in Philadelphia will be joining us after this very short break. We will continue this conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. If you're just joining us, let me just recap what we've been talking about. With almost 40 million Americans filing for unemployment benefits this spring, how are renters, homeowners making their monthly payments, that one-time check from the federal government, and money from states have helped with those bills, but those benefits are not going to last forever. We've been talking about the implications of all this with Kristen Capps, and he's Bloomberg's City Lab. He's been covering this for Bloomberg City Lab, where he is a staff writer. And joining us now is Kadeem Morris. He's a staff attorney in the housing unit at Community Legal Services in Philadelphia. In fact, works with the Philadelphia Eviction Prevention Project's Lawyer for the Day program. And Kadeem Morris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Happy to be here, Marty.
You're very welcome. And let me just make sure our listeners can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. I've been talking with Kristen Capps about the impact of this pandemic on low-wage or low-income Americans. Help us understand the impact in Philadelphia, and we know it's a large city with a large population of low-income residents.
So I think a lot of what Kristen has said is actually very true. Philadelphia right now is a predominantly renter-based city, so the majority of people living in the city are paying rent to a property owner. So that in and of itself means that the crisis can be more prevalent in the city of Philadelphia. But at the same time, we do have a significant minority population, which also correlates with populations that tend to find themselves more economically disadvantaged, either because of geographic location and funding and for several other reasons. So it does vary widely as to how the pandemic has caused the renter crisis in Philadelphia. But there is some good news because, as you have mentioned earlier, the governor did put in place an executive order that basically blocks any new eviction or mortgage foreclosure filings through July 10th. But at the same time, there's this really vulnerable population. There are 500 people or 500 families that have been through the eviction process prior to the stay-at-home order being put in place, and they are now subject to being evicted whenever the stay-at-home order expires.
Why were they not protected by the governor's order?
Because the governor's order actually goes to new cases that would have been filed. These people have been through the eviction process previously and were scheduled to either move out voluntarily or be locked out through the sheriff's process at some point before the pandemic hit. And once the stay-at-home order was put in place, all of those activities had to essentially stop.
Right, and the courts are closed, essentially.
And the courts are closed, so that can't happen right now. But whenever the courts reopen, these cases that have previously gone through the system could potentially be some of the first people to find themselves vulnerable to eviction, in addition to about 1,700 cases that were pending in municipal court, Philadelphia's eviction court, before the pandemic started, and now we're just on hold. So there's a significant population that is in some form of limbo at this point.
Kadeem, help us, and I want to hear from Kristen as well, but let me start with you. Let's say you've got a tenant in Philadelphia. They cannot afford to pay their rent. What can they do? Is it possible to negotiate with a landlord? Are there benevolent landlords who are willing to give someone a break under these circumstances?
The advice in that context is always, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Kadeem, and then I'll get you on as well. Go ahead, Kadeem.
So the advice that we always give is to proactively reach out to your landlord. I believe you had a caller previously who was discussing the fact that she had people living in her property who weren't getting unemployment benefits and everything was just being delayed. So if a tenant is aware that they are either waiting on a federal benefit or their unemployment hasn't started yet, proactively reach out to your landlord. Ask your landlord for a payment arrangement. If you have security deposits on file, maybe ask if you could use your security deposit to make up this missed month, and then you can pay that back in the back end when your rental income or your employment income stabilizes. So always be proactive with your landlord and indicate to them what's going on, because they really don't know unless you communicate with them.
And get it in writing, correct?
And get it in writing, 100%. It has to be in writing, because if you end up in court, you have to be able to show that you made some sort of different arrangement from your regular rental payment.
Kristen, we're hearing from Kadeem about Philadelphia. How about the rest of the country? Is what's happening in Philly being seen across the country?
Yes, I'm sorry for interrupting, Kadeem. And really, your advice is excellent anywhere you go. The same problem exists in most places. And I've heard a lot of frustration from renters and from landlords, too. And it seems like the best answer is really communication. There are definitely arrangements that can be made in a lot of circumstances. Half the landlords in this country are small mom and pop operations. They're not large, kind of chilly corporate entities. So, that means that a lot of these landlords have a stake in making sure their renters, thrive. No one really wants to be in the position of evicting a renter right now for pandemic reasons, in part because it will be hard to replace renters. With the economy frozen, there's not the same, lubrication in the market, and people aren't moving if they don't have to.
Right. And I would think, Kadeem, I mean, you mentioned that there are some people who are facing eviction because these were cases that predated the pandemic. But, I'm assuming it would be hard to find new renters under these circumstances.
So that is correct. It'd be very hard to find new renters. In fact, it'd be very hard for those people who might have agreed to move to find a new place to rent, because everything is either being done remotely or not done at all. Right. So the advice that we would give to someone who may have entered an agreement and is now looking down the barrel going, I need to move in a month, or I said that I would move in a month and I can't, communicate that to your landlord. Some landlords are willing to let you stay a little longer and renegotiate certain things. Of course, there's always going to be the issue of rental payments. And if you have previously gone through the system and maybe your landlord has a judgment against you, you should reach out to the Philadelphia Eviction Prevention Project. We might be able to connect you with rental assistance through the city, because the city does have at least two programs. Last week, they just had the pandemic rental relief program that I believe was fully subscribed, if not oversubscribed. So there are resources that are available to help Philadelphians make ends meet or try to give them some legal information and advice as to what their rights are at this time.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you both. And Kadeem, can you stay with us for the rest of the show?
Sure.
Okay, and he's staff attorney for Community Legal Services in the Housing Unit in Philadelphia. And again, Kristen Capps is a staff writer for Bloomberg City Lab, and we've been talking about the effect of the pandemic, the economic downturn on the housing market, on renters, on homeowners, on landlords, tenants. And again, you can join us Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Kristen, a comment from Jose picking up on, I think, what we were talking about earlier. Don't you think, he says, this would be a good time to look at the issue of wages for the working class? That's what this is all about. Do you want to weigh in on that, Kristen?
Well, what I would tell you is that that concern is a very big one for renters, for advocates in this area, and for lawmakers. You know, the current situation that we have, where we see a lot of renters continuing to make their payments as normal, and then, you know, an unknown situation for, you know, low-income families, is really a life raft. And at any moment, if that gives way, then all of those people who are holding on are thrust into uncertainty. The biggest part of that is that they don't make the wages to afford their housing, and that's anywhere across the country. So a permanent solution to this crisis is going to need to start with figuring out how to put more, you know, dollars into Americans' hands.
Here's a tweet from Lisa. Kadeem, I'll put this to you. She says, I've heard from social service agencies that some landlords are demanding their tenants' stimulus check. Is that legal?
So the landlord can't directly demand your stimulus check payment. They can, and they have sometimes sent out a letter indicating all of the forms of assistance that are available to tenants out there and encourage their tenants to apply. But at the end of the day, as Kristen was pointing out too, vulnerable households live paycheck to paycheck, if not below paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. So the landlord is seeing this from the context of, I need my rental payment at the end of the month. But if you have a car payment, if you've got children, if you've got medical expenses, all of these costs are now being confronted by your reduced income, and tenants sometimes have to prioritize differently than how the landlord would expect them to prioritize just to make ends meet.
But a landlord can't say to someone, can they, Kadeem, you know, give me that $1,200 check?
No. They can tell you that you can receive $1,200, but they can't demand that you hand that check over to them.
Kristen, you want to weigh in on that as well?
No, I think that Kadeem's answer is correct. It's spot on. And I think that is not going to necessarily stop landlords from making these demands or in other ways trying to bend the law. So, you know, hopefully landlords decide to be scrupulous and recognize the common sacrifice that all Americans have to make.
Let me get Irene from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Irene, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much for this program. It's
very
helpful during this time. I am represent a small landlord. I have properties in Philadelphia. And my comment is kind of the other side of the coin. If you have a problematic tenant who was problematic before the pandemic, continues to be problematic, but with the new ruling that the governor passed, which de facto means you can't file an eviction until September, and then it takes 45 days to reach some sort of an eviction process, and then there's going to be Thanksgiving and Christmas, these tenants, problematic tenants who can pay, who are working, realize the fact that they can live in this property rent-free for 10 months And we as landlords have absolutely no recourse because the courts are not going to be functioning effectively. The courts are not allowing us to file electronically. We have to file only through an attorney. There's no mediation that's happening to make this process more effective. And basically, we as landlords who have to pay mortgages, who have to pay bills, are completely not represented or not considered by the new ruling of the governor, which is effectively going to lead these landlords to become just basically unpaid tenants, I mean, because they have no motivation to pay. There's no eviction process in place. So I would like the attorney who supports this to comment on this.
Absolutely. No, Irene, I really appreciate your call to Radio Times, and we want to hear from all sides of this issue. And let me put that to you, Kadeem. She's talking about problematic tenants, and I think by that she means tenants that can afford to pay rent, but they don't. And that she, as a landlord, is really stuck because of the moratorium on evictions. And then, as she said, it's just going to take months to work this stuff out.
So I want to acknowledge at least that it's a real issue that there are some tenants out there who are problematic in some way, shape, or form. I don't think it's fair to say that right now it's not going to be until September when you can file a new eviction. The order does go through July 10th at current, which means that you can either, once the courthouse is actually open or if you have an attorney as a landlord who's handling your matters, can actually file a new proceeding at that point in time. Of course, there is the process. Maybe it takes 21 days from the date that you're in court for you to remove a tenant from your property. But the tenant doesn't just walk away from your property and is not responsible for any debt that is owed to you. If you so desire as a landlord, you can go to court and you can receive a judgment against the tenant. And that's an enforceable judgment. It's the same way it would operate pre-pandemic. Although there is a tolling of the time to put someone out on the street and make them vulnerable to homelessness during the COVID-19 pandemic, it doesn't remove the right of the landlord to proceed through court and still give their judgment when court opens up.
Kristen, we're almost out of time here. We haven't really talked about homeowners and things like mortgage payments. Are we seeing similar problems of people having a hard time making those payments?
Yes, there's definitely widespread mortgage forbearance. One of the first government actions that the federal government took on this issue was to provide forbearance for struggling homeowners with federally backed mortgages. And that's a wide swath of the housing market. Right.
And, like Fannie and Freddie.
Also loans made through the VA. Loans through USDA for rural housing. There's a ton of federal interactions. Any homes that have been insured by the FHA, loans that have been resold through a federally backed entity. So there are tons of ways that the federal government touches mortgage markets. And all of those homeowners have access to forbearance. I would say one thing that they ought to be mindful of is the federal government forbearance is not a question you have to ask your bank. If you have the hardship, you tell your bank, and that's the story. A lot of banks are providing their own forbearance programs, and these are at slightly less generous terms than what the federal government is providing as a right to homeowners. So homeowners who are facing difficulty should know that they don't have to take the offer from their banks. They can actually get, you know, forbearance through the federal government provision.
We have to leave it there. Kristen Capps, thanks so much for joining us on Radio Times. He's a staff writer for Bloomberg City Lab. Kristen, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And Kadeem Mara, staff attorney in the housing unit at Community Legal Services in Philadelphia. Kadeem, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out more about the program. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of the show, is produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.